Hello, you're very welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast, the new look RTE Rugby Podcast for the new season. For those of you who've been giving out in the YouTube comments for the last 3 years about having to look at the wardrobe in my bedroom, your questions have been answered. We have finally responded. We have a beautiful new studio set up here in RTE's main offices. A couple of nice couches, memorabilia behind us, nice little trinkets and bits and bobs. We also have in-studio guests. Hannah O'Connor is here with us. Johnny Holland is also back in Cork. And before we start talking about a Rugby World Cup this week, Hannah, yep. What about the new setup?
Stunning. It's a fair upgrade, all right, from our kitchens and bedrooms. So, yeah, nice to see that you've thrown in a few of your own trophies as well from home. So it's nice to see it, yeah.
Good. I brought in all of my memorabilia, yeah. Bits and pieces. What you might notice as well over the course of listening to these podcasts this season, and this is going to be across the RTGA podcast, soccer podcast, and a few various one-off special podcasts as well. All of them are going to be from here over the course of this season. And as you might have seen there's people walking past. We're right in the middle of an open plan office. So people are going to have to mind what they're saying behind us. You might keep an eye out for your favourite RT stars walking behind us as well. But we're right out in the middle of the floor here. We want to give you a sense of what a working sports department is like. You can see the pictures of Shane Lowry and Katie Taylor behind us, which decorate the walls of the studio. And we're ready to go. Johnny, unfortunately, you're back in Cork. We couldn't get you to come all the way up here. You just didn't fancy the trip. You didn't want to see our lovely new home. How are you?
I'm good, but like a good Cork person, I'm not going to leave. So it would help if you actually invited me. You know, that would be great. But it's great to see you turning pro. You know, it suits you.
Johnny's demands for a Cork podcast studio setup were not met, unfortunately, but we coaxed him back into coming on for the new season. But he's delighted to be here with us. He's in, where are you now at the moment? In CBC, getting ready for the new school year.
I am, yeah. So I'm trying to avoid people there now as we're chatting, but I'll be back up in Lansdowne seeing the rugby going on.
And Hannah, you're also ticking down the final days.
I know,
of
the fact that Johnny's back
well.
Means that my countdown has started as well. I have another week of freedom before returning to normal life. So yeah, the end is near for my summer holidays.
Yeah, we need to start adding some non-teachers or school workers into our guest list for the podcast for the season, make things a little bit easier.
No.
Anyway, we have a lot to get through because there's a Rugby World Cup kicking off in just a few days in Sunderland on Friday night. England taking on the USA in the tournament opener. We might just start, Hannah, with the significance of this whole tournament, because we've seen a complete explosion of the game in the last few years, mainly down to England. Mm-hmm. 370,000 odd tickets have been sold for this tournament already. The tournament, the final at Allianz Stadium, Twickenham, 82,000 sellout already. 8 years ago, I believe the full attendance for the entire tournament just up the road in UCD was 47,000 when it was played in Ireland. We're looking at, like, we're up at 370,000 now, 9-10 times that. The spotlight has never been greater on the women's game coming into a World Cup like this.
Yeah, and I think it's fitting that I suppose that England are the hosts of it. I suppose they've been kind of the flag bearers of kind of showing how it is to run both a professional international women's team, but also that the league that they have and kind of the nature of how they're running that and making it so attractive to the viewer, both kind of male and female viewers across the globe. And we've seen that from the draw of players they have kind of internationally wanting to come and play in the Prem. So for them to be able to host it, and as you said, like, ticket sales kind of speak for themselves of the excitement that's building for it to be over double from what it was even in New Zealand from the last World Cup out, it is huge. Yeah, so for Ireland to finally be at this World Cup after the disappointment of not making the last one adds extra kind of significance for us. And as I said, it being so close to home, only a stone's throw away, feels like it's a home World Cup for us as well, such as the accessibility, which is great.
And that's part of it as well, Johnny, that, like, it's not quite a home World Cup, but it's not far off being a home World Cup. We obviously missed a kind of an open goal to grow the game 8 years ago when it was here in Ireland. But the big thing about this World Cup, from an Irish point of view, as much as anyone else, if you get it right, both on and off the pitch this time round, the opportunities and the gains for your programme are absolutely massive, looking 5-10 years down the line.
Yeah, and I think even it starts with the fact that it is only across the water, but the times will line up pretty well and people will have visibility on games, like not just, you know, Irish games, but all games. I think that's really important when you're trying to grow the sport, certainly this side of the world. Like, obviously, once it's at this side of the world, it's not on the other side of the world, and there's time clashes there, or like early mornings and stuff like that. But for us here, I think it is a massive opportunity with it being so close to kind of leverage that. And as Hannah said, like, everything that English rugby does well in rugby structurally. You know, I think we need to definitely have a look at that and leverage it a bit at the moment and take the spin off from that.
On that, Hannan, I think you mentioned there, like the players that are going to emerge over the extra games that are going to be on TV, not just Irish games as well, but you look, you know, the England, New Zealand, Canada, who are one of the big nations now in women's rugby. Who do you think are going to be the names that we don't necessarily know too much about? Maybe like a passive rugby fan might know too much about, but over the next 4 or 6 weeks can kind of become a household name.
Yeah, I suppose from that opening game, you're obviously looking. It's a great one to start off with the USA and England on a Friday night. Is a cracking way to start it off, I think, especially with the significance, obviously, with the hosts kicking it off. But you've got obviously Ilona Maher on the other side for USA, who's, I think, everybody and anybody in the rugby world and outside the rugby world know her name and her face from all that she's done to promote the games. So I think someone like her, I think. You know, the other big teams, you've mentioned them there, the New Zealands. They've obviously got the likes of Georgia Miller, who's a crossover as well from the Sevens game, but they have a load of incredibly exciting players throughout their team. And the same for Canada, someone like Sophie Dugoody is back after a long knee injury out of the game as well. And she's someone who's kind of all action forward, she kicks their goals for them as well. So there's so many different names. And I suppose from the Ireland point of view too, we'll obviously mention the girls who are missing through injury, but it creates gaps for our own girls to stand up and you know put themselves in the limelight too. So it's an incredibly exciting for to see who's gonna step up and kind of shine during this block.
World Cup cycles can come around fairly quickly every 4 years, but this has been a very, very long wait for Ireland. 8 year gap between World Cups. You look back at the way the game was in 2017. We've already spoken about the ticket sales, for example, when it was in Ireland, 47,000, which wasn't like a low number. I think it actually was an increase on the previous World Cup as well. I don't want to open up old wounds, but for example, like in the space of 8 years, players' careers come and go. You made your debut after Ireland's last appearance at a World Cup. You've obviously since retired before they're back this time around. I think that kind of sums up the gap between these tournaments and how long it's been.
That's it really, because I think I remember going down to UCD to watch the women play their matches there, and I think I'd only literally, if even, just started playing rugby. So that's kind of the gap of everything that's happened in between, and the disappointment for us to miss out, you know, getting beaten by Scotland in that qualifier at the death, you know, to miss out on the last one going down to New Zealand to play there. It leaves such a massive gap. You feel like it's absolutely, you know, huge from the time that we've last played it. So I think from that point of view of, I don't think the girls are going to be overawed to be heading to this World Cup, and the expectation that's on it, it's more the excitement that comes with it and the ability to finally be on the biggest stage where the girls should feel that they should be. So it's great to be there now.
And Johnny, it's not just like the profile of the game that's changed so much in the 8 years since Ireland were last in it as well. Like the game itself, the style of play has probably changed a lot over the course of two World Cup cycles.
Yeah, it has, of course. And I think even across the game in general, like it's a game that moves really quickly. You know, laws get changed, and even from a strength and conditioning perspective, like the women's game has gone really physical. You know, so when you look at Ireland's pack, like they have the ability to be really physical as well. But the game is ever changing, ever evolving. If you miss, you know, a full World Cup cycle, or if you're going from 2 World Cups ago, it across all levels of the game, both male and female, it's a completely different sport. If you look back at some of the old Lions clips, like we would have done in the last couple of weeks, you're going, geez, you're not allowed to do that anymore. That's a great penalty, but that's actually illegal now, you know? So yeah, the game is ever evolving, which is a good thing, but it's hard to keep up with. And the style is certainly different. Defenses would have looked different, one World Cup cycle ago, never mind two. So it's certainly very different.
Speaking of ever changing, and just one of the changes immediately for this World Cup that's kind of just popped into my mind, Hannah, the flashing gum shields is actually going to be a really big one over the course of this, because I know, like, we have seen it over the course of the last couple of years when the mouth guard HIAs have kind of become fairly common, and you see players going off wondering why they're being taken off. I think with the mouth guard one, or the flashing mouth guard in particular, it's like it's going to become fairly obvious to the people watching and trying to get a gauge of, you know, certain hits and what is
constitutes it.
Yeah,
yeah,
what
but it's
constitutes
an
it.
interesting one, because like, Johnny, you're probably familiar with it as well, that like a couple of years ago, probably 2 cycles ago, they introduced the ones with the chip in them that we all had to wear. Like, so for the Six Nations, we were putting them in and getting fitted for them. That it was the same idea that you would could get flagged for it, because we were told that they had to collaborate and they had to make sure that they were kind of checked in before you went out to the pitch, and not to shove them in your sock or shove them in your sports bra when you're walking out because it could trigger something. So we were all on edge. They've been like, what's going to set it off? Like this new kind of found thing with them. So yeah, I think the flashing nature, the girls would be used to that in terms of the HIA, but I think the flashing almost adds an added level of kind of for the spectators as well to be seeing. But it's funny, like, because we've seen it over the men's game as well over the last couple of years. There's sometimes, you know, you see lads going off or girls going off and there's, you know, their hands up and they're shrugging as to why they're going off or whatever. The independent doctor has seen something or the gum shield has triggered something. So it'll definitely make for interesting, and I hopefully it won't be anything too controversial out of it, and it'll be nothing but beneficial for the players from a health point of view, I guess, and safety and all that.
I'm curious to see what the level of flashing and how bright the gum shield is, Johnny, as well. Just from a TV smiling and spectator standpoint.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it's obviously very different, and it's funny. Like Hannah says, hopefully there'll be nothing controversial. There's always something controversial. It's just not going to go smoothly. You know, even when the gum shields were used to see when someone needs a HIA and they get triggered, players are looking around. They're ready to, you know, swing a doctor. It's like they don't want to go off, and they're arguing with people. They know deep down they should go off, but like there's always going to be question marks. Everything that involves change will be questioned. Now, change is a good thing, you know, and we're all a bit resistant to it, but it'll be very interesting to see something new technology-wise. Can I say those words? Technology-wise, it's always interesting to see some change like that. It's obviously for the greater good. Like, I mean, we're talking a lot about concussion and brain injuries, and, you know, players do take it very seriously. I think, unfortunately, there's still an element of, you know, younger cohorts or less experienced players needing to unfortunately go through an experience or see someone going through an experience where you do take it more seriously. So everything that can be done to highlight it is a good thing. And we spoke with Gary Ringrose and you know, his honesty and all that kind of stuff. So it is being highlighted quite a bit. But I know there's been question marks around the use of gum shields and everyone being different, you know, everyone having different thresholds and even, you know, you can talk about a gum shield, but then is the return to play protocol, is the time off your feet and all that, is it appropriate? So there's going to be questions as much as there's going to be as much as it's a great way to highlight some of the injuries that you get in a brain in the game that we're playing.
Before we move on to Ireland specifically, I might just kind of talk, Hannah, in broad terms about the main contenders for the tournament.
Yeah.
England, the overwhelming favourites, as they have been a couple of times in the past and haven't got over the line. That is the kind of the fun narrative over the next few weeks of, you know, can clearly the best team in the world actually go and win the trophy? The big question, obviously, so is, will they do it?
This is the thing, and you know, there's the player side of me. Obviously, if you want an Ireland to go as far, when you're looking at it, I suppose, from the whole approach of it, you can't look past the juggernaut that is England and what they've done over the last few years and the strength and depth in their squad that we've spoken about. As you said, though, when it was in New Zealand, they had it all at their feet and they managed to get pipped to the post by New Zealand, who kind of came out of nowhere, but they tend to be able to turn it on when they need to be able to turn it on. And we don't
in comparison to 12 months previous to that World Cup, they were in a tough spot.
They were, and they were getting, you know, kind of the pressure on them. But it's whether or not England can live with the tag of the favourites. It's whether or not that they can deal with the pressure that brings, whether they can perform to the level that they know they can and that they should consistently for all the games to get themselves obviously out of the group, as you'd imagine they will with ease, but to be able to do it then for those three matches. And they'll obviously have the biggest crowd following them, but it's the pressure. It's like we've seen it before with teams who are nailed on favourites and who haven't been able to get over the line, and they'll have that firmly etched in their memory of the last time out and they were in that Rugby World Cup final against New Zealand and it just didn't happen for them. So anything can happen in World Cups. It's like anyone's for the taking. So there's part of me that's like, yeah, you can't see past England, but there's also part of me that I can't quite say that I would want England to win a World Cup.
Johnny, I'm going to give you a good out here and say right now, if you predict maybe New Zealand or Canada to win it and they do go on and win it, we'll pull out that clip in about 6 weeks' time. We'll share it everywhere. We'll say Johnny Holland had it first. But if you predict, like, no one's gonna remember it if you predict England now and say they're gonna win the World Cup and they go on and do it. Predict one of the outsiders. Go on.
You haven't actually backed me up with these clips in the past when I was saying Australia. Then you just let it go into the ether, like, you know, you don't reproduce it. But I'm a bit of a sports romantic in one sense. I actually love seeing the favourites winning. You know, obviously we prefer Ireland to win, but once Ireland don't win, or if they don't win, I should say, I'm a bit of a romantic that way. I like favourites winning. I like a home tournament going home. You know, I would have been shouting for France in the last Men's World Cup. You know what I mean? But as Hannah said, are we allowed to say it on this podcast? Like, no,
go
one's
for
really
Johnny.
Shouting.
Yeah, go
yeah,
for
no one's really shouting for England at all. Go. But the rugby romantic in me is like, yeah, win a home World Cup, do what you should be doing. They're world number one.
They've been the leaders in growing the game. Like, you have to acknowledge that. Yeah. Obviously, what they've done for the game over the last 5, 6, even 10 years. Has been monumental in the growth of the game globally. They have been the leaders in it. So, like, you can't argue that in the same breath. But I'm with Johnny, I can't.
Yeah, it's like obviously, we're being facetious here. All jokes aside, you don't want to say they deserve to win it because a ball hasn't been kicked in the tournament yet. Mm-hmm. But you can't argue that they don't deserve to win it from the broader sense of where the game is at the moment. Yeah. If England weren't doing what they had been doing, there wouldn't be 370,000 tickets sold for this tournament. Yeah. The game would not be where it is today.
Yeah.
The Irish team might not be professional. Most of the other countries probably wouldn't be professional as well. So they've
forced everybody else to get their acting gear to a sense. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I suppose, will we settle on it will be appropriate for them to win
it? I can say that.
Rather than you may or may not want it.
Yes. Okay. Appropriate is the good word.
Very good.
Just for the sound bites, can we just say New Zealand are going to win the Women's World Cup? And then I can just say Canada will win the Women's World Cup. And you can pull that out then at some stage.
Great. Yeah. We'll work our magic editing around all those little bits. Yeah. That'll work ideal. Let's move on to Ireland. I don't want to be a downer, but the preparation since the Six Nations has not been ideal. Ireland play France in the first game of that Six Nations. They lose. They didn't really play their best, but there were signs coming out of it that, do you know what? If Ireland and France met in a World Cup quarterfinal later on in the year, they might actually have a good crack at winning it. They might have their number. And I think most of the players probably felt it at the time. But unfortunately, since then, you lose Aaron King after that game against England for the World Cup. You lose Dorothy Wall in the last round of the Six Nations as well against Scotland, also out for the World Cup. And Ireland struggled in that final game against Scotland without the pair of them. Aoife Wafer is a big doubt. We'll obviously be getting an injury update from Scott Beaman and the Irish squad at some stage later on today. But to be honest, like, given the injury updates we tend to get from teams, I would take most of that with a pinch of salt. I won't really be believing who's in a starting lineup until we actually see them out on the pitch on Sunday or the Sunday after or the Sunday after. So Aoife Wafer, big doubt for the first two games. Mm-hmm. You never know, could be back for a third, but I wouldn't believe it until I see it. Adele McMahon didn't play in warm-up games. She might be much closer to returning, but again, not believing it till I see it. Even aside from the injuries, defence coach Hugh Hogan left a few months ago, something which wasn't a popular decision among the players. I believe James Gaisbrook is in, but it's a third defence coach in the space of 18 months leading into a World Cup. Then a tight head, Christy Haney, has also been added to the injury list. She didn't make the World Cup squad with a knock. I know she wasn't a starting player, but she's an experienced player in that group. At Lucid, they've had to bring in Elena Perry, an ex-England international who just made her debut in the World Cup warm-up games. On the positive side, though, Bevan Parsons and Sam Monahan both back in. It's ultimately, this hasn't been ideal World Cup preparation.
It hasn't, but like, rarely would you see where it's a flush kind of, you know, run through where you're delighted and you're firing on all cylinders. But yeah, you're right. It hasn't been ideal. I think from the start of Six Nations and those kind of green shoots that were shown in terms of the defensive performance against France, that kind of aggression and the line speed that we had is something that has kind of been missing, and that connectedness has kind of been missing from those two warm-up games that we've seen. Now, granted, you're tweaking things, you're trying things differently, but essentially, as Johnny will know, your defence should still look the same in terms of that energy that you're bringing and that connectedness. There was a bit of times where Ireland were caught a bit narrow, which was something that we hadn't seen during kind of the times with Hugh Hogan's kind of stamp on it. So that would be something that definitely they'll be looking for a quick fix before they hit the ground running this weekend. As you said, having the girls back is great, and as I said, the ones that you're missing, the only benefit to the girls that, you know, the likes of the Aaron and the likes of the Dorothy and Aoife Wafer who are missing, they've known that from a long kind of run into it, so it's allowed other people to step forward. We've seen the likes of Grace Moore have really good performances in those two warm-up games. We've seen Fiona Chute, we've also seen Emer Carey come back from injury as well, so there's those kind of flashes which are going to benefit the girls. But definitely for this weekend, I know you're obviously not going to show too much of your hand in certain bits, maybe like set piece plays and launchers and things like that in a warm-up game. You're kind of holding them for the main competition, but they'll definitely be wanting an improved performance. And again, starting quick like has been their kind of downfall. We've seen that in the Scotland game where it was a slow start. We see things around the pillars where they were a bit dodgy around ruck time. And then you see the next week out against Canada, the caliber that Canada are able to exactly pinpoint what you did wrong in the first week and absolutely slice you to bits for it. And that's what they did. They pinpointed where Ireland's weaknesses were. And that's the type of team that you have with the Canada or those kind of top tier teams. They are able to kind of capitalise on where your weaknesses are. So Ireland will be looking, they'll take a lot from that game. They'll take a lot from the two games, but they'll be looking for that quick start against Japan. They'll be looking for kind of hit the ground running defensively. They're going to get most of their confidence through their defence. So if that they can start and have a good defensive performance against Japan, it'll set them on the right foot for the rest of the competition, hopefully.
And like in terms of quick starts, Johnny, it's not just a quick start they need in the game. They want a quick start in the tournament because the fixtures have been laid out pretty much perfectly, I would say, for them to have Japan and to have Spain up in the first two games. If you can get in, you can win those first two games. You're into a quarterfinal regardless of what happens. Then you can go and have your crack off New Zealand. You would say, Johnny, like if they were going up against the New Zealand first game out this weekend after some patchiness in those two warm-up games and maybe you take a heavy beating against the Black Ferns, all of a sudden you're into serious, serious must-win territory and a lot of pressure building.
Yeah, and you just wonder, is that something that can build into your kind of preparations as well? If you know that the fixtures are in a certain way, I'm not trying to say that you're going to take them for granted because they're not, but you do, like you speak about kind of like peaking at the right time. You don't need to be at your full best on Sunday. You know, it's maybe you can get away with one or two things. Maybe you can still build your game into round three, hopefully. But again, we've seen in other areas of sport, like, I mean, South Africa, Australia last weekend, you know, didn't go the way people would have predicted. Sport doesn't go the way you predicted. And especially on paper, it looks very easy. But human behavior comes into it after that and pressure of tournaments comes into it. And some teams have no pressure and that's great for them. There might be an upset. So the big thing that you'd be, you know, relaying is that upsets will happen in this tournament, but it can't be Ireland. Like, you know, it can't be us. And so yeah, they're going to have to start very quickly, but I don't think you have to be perfect. I think that's my point. You don't have to be perfect in the first two games, but as Hannah said, you definitely build your confidence in your defense. So the things that you want to be rock solid, you can scrape through on an attacking game that you know is going to click at some stage. You know, you hope that it's going to click, but you can kind of say, we left opportunities there, we left this there. It's very hard in defense to say, oh, if you were just a bit wider, if you just got your spacings from the ruck, if we were a bit more aggressive off the line, because you weren't, you know what I mean? And there are things that are a lot more black and white, because your defensive structure shouldn't change a whole lot based on anyone you're coming up against. You might change attacking strikes, or you might change a little bit of how you kind of strategize, putting passes deeper or going over the top or kick game or whatever. But in defense, you rarely change your identity, you know? So that's something I think that they can build their performance and their kind of confidence through, is their defensive side of things. Because, like, you know, you can scrape narrow wins with low scoring games if your defense is rock solid. Yeah. It's very hard to go the other way and say, we'll just keep scoring and keep leaking. That's the most nervous you'll ever be as a coach. And players, I don't think, feel the same nerves. They just think we're going to score again. But as a coach, you definitely feel if your defence is rock solid, you can beat anyone.
On the attacking side, how important then is Dan O'Brien to the kicking game, which is obviously the big part of Ireland's game that we've seen over the last 12 months as well, but just the general game management and how to, I suppose, just manipulate Ireland's way around the pitch, because we do see them at times lose their way a little bit and just not taking chances and maybe taking wrong options. Dan O'Brien's still a very, very young player, only been involved 3 years ago. As we were talking just a little bit before the podcast, you played with her on her debut out in Japan, who Ireland are appropriately playing this weekend.
Yeah.
And I suppose what you said was the big difference between playing Japan in Japan and playing them in Northampton this weekend is going to be the lack of humidity.
Yeah, that will certainly be, like, as I said, great memories of that tour. Obviously, I've played Japan three times, once in Ireland, which was not fond memories as I got sent off for that one. But the other two in Japan were more enjoyable, but the humidity is something ridiculous. Like, as I said, it's like someone compared it to, it's like trying to run around while someone is holding like a sack of potatoes on your chest. It's just ridiculous. Then you can't catch the ball because you're so sweaty from the humidity that's the biggest issue. But yeah, looking back to that, you're taking obviously the likes of Japan and Spain out of the heat, where there obviously is a big advantage for them. So bringing them over to England will kind of level the playing field a bit. And obviously Ireland should be way more, you know, able to grapple them now. Obviously a couple of years, 3 years probably after that tour now that we went over, it's completely different. As you said, Dan O'Brien, you know, and Andy Fidalton both made their debuts on that tour with us, and they feel like
18,
they were
18,
real babies at that stage. I remember we were, obviously going bus to and from training and to matches. And obviously we knew Donna was obviously going to be the starting 10. So we used to be peppering her with quick fire questions to get her thinking on the spot quickly. It's like, referee is blown for a penalty. Arm is up. We're inside the 22. You're 10 metres out from the touchline. What are you doing? And then we'd count her down and put her under pressure. And if she didn't answer in time, we'd be like, gone. The referee has decided you're taking too long. They've changed it around. So just peppering her and giving her dogs abuse. So we put her under severe pressure. But to see how much she's grown as a player, as you said, like, she's now a pivotal part to the way Ireland play and that the style that they play and how much she's grown as a player. And Eva Dalton too, along with the rest of those young players who have come through. How she plays is key, and what she brings to the team is key. We obviously, the only fear then is you've an over-reliance on her, but what she can bring for you is that big left boot. We talked about it last week, of their ability to get you kicking pressure, get you out of the kind of the pressure pen that you might be in and put your opposition into the pressure pen. But I think we saw it in both the Scotland game and the Canada game that Ireland have to get the balance of the gameplay right. Mm-hmm. For Scotland, for that first half an hour, they struggled to play their own game and to play to the strengths and put Scotland under pressure. But when they did that and tweaked things and started punching ball and going forward and using our pack and allowing the backs to have the space out wide, then we saw what we could do. We could rip them open. The same for the Canada game. It took us a while to realise that the kicking game wasn't working and Canada were having a field day with it. So I suppose it's from management as well to filter that down to the players and that leadership group within the players to get the tactics right against the likes of Japan and Spain, leading into that so that you can feel that you're not kind of overdoing it on the kicking front, but you're using it at the right times, because we are now in the luxury that we have the backs that are able to punish teams. Mm. So we'll want to marry the two together between that kind of balance of play.
Johnny, you might give us the out halves perspective on that as well.
Out of halves are never wrong, I suppose. I think the frustrating part of the Canada game is that it was four in the backfield for Canada. And like as Hannah said, you know, we're kind of kicking in on top of that and allowing them to run back. And they're quite athletic, like they can run back fairly handy. So I think that was just, it's the management of the game. But, you know, players have to take responsibility on that as well. I'm sure management wouldn't have set them out to kick into a four-person backfield. Like, it just doesn't work like that. And then I do understand, though, like it was probably, I'm guessing here, but strategically or tactically, or saying kick out of her own half and we're going to kick off pain. She's got a weapon of a boot. So, you know, let Dana kick you out of your half. And she did it expertly at the start of the second half and the momentum kind of changed. So she has the ability to do that. But if teams are going to put three in the backfield, which is actually overloading a backfield in this day and age, and you don't want to play in your own half because it is a World Cup, then stick the ball in the air. Like, you know, You can not kick long and still get the ball back and still help your transition to be more controlled and not be in your own half if they do win the ball back, you know. So I think strategically they just need to be a little bit better cued, I think, or more clued in themselves as well across the game. Because like, I'm not saying that just because it's a World Cup you don't play in your own half. If the opportunity is there, if there's four in the backfield, you should find run space. But, you know, nerves kick in or someone's execution or whatever it is. But again, like Ireland, depending on selection, could have a left footer at 10, a right footer at 12, a right footer at 15. There's loads of kick options across that back line, so there's no real excuse to get the kick strategy wrong.
To go back on the injuries to Aaron King and Dorothy Wall and Aoife Wafer as well, because mm-hmm. we're presuming she probably won't be playing for the first two games, I would say, at least. Let's talk about what Ireland are losing from those players being absent and how they go about making up those skills in the aggregate. Who's, for example, who's taking on the big ball carrying responsibilities with Aoife Wafer not playing? Who's going to be operating the line-out? Because Aaron King was pretty much Ireland's primary target at line-out time in the first few games of the Six Nations last year. Are they going to go after the ball at the ground on the ground a little bit less because they don't have like the same level of players to take on teams at the breakdown? How are they going to go about all those things and replacing them, Hannah?
Yeah, I think we've seen kind of flashes of it in those two games. As I said, it's been such a long time knowing that the girls weren't going to be around, so it was up to everybody else to stand up. And I think we've seen, obviously, in that Scotland game, Brittany Hogan was probably more in a leadership position. She was in the ref's ear a lot, probably more so than we've seen before without Sam on the pitch. And obviously with her addition, she's well able to have that good go forward ball, and we've seen her consistently do that in games that she's played. So big onus on her is, I suppose, to get that go forward ball. Having Sam back obviously gives you it in abundance as well, so it's about like feeding off that as well. I think the other player we've seen as well, Grace Moore, has obviously stepped up to the plate in that flanker position and has had big impact on big ball carries. But yeah, the likes of the breakdown, you get menaces at the breakdown, and the likes of Aaron King and Aoife Wafer that you probably miss a little bit. It's not everybody's go-to on the other players that are there at the moment. I think someone like Adele McMahon fits that bill a bit more around the breakdown then others in there. So having someone like her on the pitch could be really key for that kind of cuteness around there and that kind of dogginess around the ruck. So she'd be someone I'd be hoping would be back in the mix for them. Hopefully injuries have gone to plan for her. But yeah, I suppose line-out wise, it's an interesting one because obviously you've Sam back, you'd presume be your main caller of the line-out. But someone like Erin King, yes, she was new to the whole line-out kind of thing.
But she was so easy to get up into the air.
That's the thing. She was a rocket to throw up.
Yeah.
You know, it's a mixture of stuff. What was interesting to watch kind of over the two warm-up games, the line-out did function very well. But the only thing I'd notice is it was a lot of the time it was the caller going up themselves. So like Fiona Chute went up predominantly in that kind of Canada game. Now, I'd say with the other hand, in those two warm-up games, knowing you're coming into a big competition, you don't show your hand. So I'd imagine it was kept simple, nothing too fancy, nothing kind of special plays off it. So I imagine they will need a bit more variety to it because, of course, every team is going to analyse everybody's warm-up games. So they will need a bit more variety of that. Someone like Ruth Campbell does give you that height and does give you, she is as easy to throw up as Erin is. She is like literally straight up. So you're looking, you know, for, you get the height off her and you get the speed off the ground. But what you might miss then is the weight in the pack with her, obviously. But it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do there in the first two games and what strategy they go for. But they're going to need something definitely to have that kind of variety to keep the set piece as it was going well in terms of line out. They're going to want that to keep ticking in the right direction to have that foothold. Otherwise, we've seen like in the past, then you can't, if you don't make the kind of the inroads at line out time, having someone like Dana's boot becomes obsolete. So they'll be wanting to marry the two together to get the best outcome, I guess.
Mm. And like Johnny, like from your coaching point of view, I'll put you in the situation now, like with Cork on where, like Jack Kelleher pulls up injured and is going to miss a couple of games. Do you try individually get someone in there to replace exactly what he's offering, or do you try share those roles out, maybe a couple of players, and alter your game plan accordingly?
I hope you're not putting any.
No. Look, touch wood. Touch wood.
Any of the kibosh on us, yeah. No, but like sometimes you can replace a player like for like, and sometimes you have that. You have someone in reserve that does the same thing, same role. Like Ronan O'Sullivan would have been an out and out seven for us, and we had other sevens, but they didn't do the exact same role as what he had done. So you just don't try and replace that, you know. So, but then the other thing is like, yeah, you can. Sometimes it's like someone so dominant that they take all that of a particular role, poaching or lineup ball or ball carrying, and you actually see other people grow, or everyone takes a little bit of the pie when that person isn't there. So again, like Ireland's hookers are. You know, and the hooker position is generally good around the breakdown anyway, but Ireland's hookers are very good in contact around the breakdown, so you might see a bit more of them, you know. So it's, you don't have to, I don't think as a coach you're going, who's going to replace them? If you have a certain style as a seven or a lineup caller, yes, it'll be a bit more like for like. But sometimes when it's just the back five and you're getting a certain balance, you can kind of maneuver things in a way that you're not replacing the person, you're just replacing a position in the back five or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So shared roles and responsibilities, but you'll see people grow. And as Hannah said, like Grace Moore getting into a real confrontational ball carrying position, like, you know, you see people taking those opportunities afterwards.
Yeah, I do. I really do hope I'm not jinxing Johnny Holland now, because I do remember in the Six Nations last year talking about how absolutely loaded Ireland were in terms of back row depth. And then they go and they lose Erin King.
They also get
injured even away for Adele McMahon hasn't played in the warm up games as well. So hopefully all that bad juju has been cleared, Johnny. Let's move it on to the positives. We kind of dwelled on a few negatives there now for a few minutes. What have you seen, Hannah, in the two warm up games that does give you confidence coming into the tournament?
I think especially in the Canada game, we've seen that, you know, in that second half performance, especially that Ireland have proved to themselves that they can mix it with the top tier teams. That, you know, they've come, you know, obviously the New Zealand game, they've been on a constant kind of wanting to prove that they are kind of pushing themselves away from the likes of the Wales, the Scotlands, the Italys, and make that gulf between. And obviously the Six Nations didn't finish exactly the way they wanted it to. But I think the performances have shown what Ireland are capable of doing. So for me, it's that style of rugby that they're now playing. It's that ability to punch, go forward ball with their pack, having good set piece, having that kind of parity in the scrum or dominance in the scrum, but the line out on the mall has worked really, really well, both offensively and defensively. So I think they'll be wanting to add to that, but also mix the two things. Be able to punch and get the game plan right, but also then release the backs, because we have some seriously exciting backs. Obviously, we mentioned Bavin Parsons being back, but if you have her on one wing, Amy Lee Costigan on the other, we have a ridiculous abundance of pace there and power. The same true to centres of what they can. If you've put the likes of Eve Higgins in there and you bring Aoife Dalton, we're lucky that we have a wealth there of players that are really exciting to watch. So I think that's something that is really, really positive going forward for Ireland. And I think we've shown that, and they'll just be wanting to layer that and be able to showcase that on the biggest stage, I guess, and make that kind of transition and bring it across. As you said, probably haven't shown the full array of what we can do in those two warm-up games with the slow starts and the bit of kind of defensive lapses, but click those things into gear and all of a sudden, you know, with the big massive crowds that you'd be hoping Ireland will have behind them on the ground over there, that it'll continue to grow and be firing on all cylinders when it matters most.
And Johnny, for you, what would be the key pillars that Scott Beaman will be looking at across those couple of warm-up games and from the Six Nations as well? It's not all about the warm-up games, but the key pillars that he'd probably be pinning his game to?
I think as a coach, like you have to have your key pillars as it is. Like there's non-negotiables of set piece and obviously kick strategy we went through, but I think...
Have they been performing?
Obviously the kicking game hasn't. I think that's something that they can do a bit more with. But I wouldn't say it's not performing, but I think they learned a lesson on the, especially going into the second half of the Canada game. Set piece hasn't been an issue. You know, it's not something that you're going into saying we're going to be in trouble here. But I think the part that excites me is like, you know, you have options to play different styles across their backline. And, you know, Hannah's right in saying that, you know, the forwards need to give you a target and the whole game becomes easier when your forward pack are on fire. And if your pack are on top of the other pack, like the game just becomes easier and backs get all the credit for it, obviously. But like, you know, it's punching holes, it's getting you going forward, it's winning the ball in the right areas, it's not being kind of boxed into winning it in certain areas and then you don't really get a platform. So the pack are obviously massively important. But I think like, you know, sometimes I wonder, I always say this to players, like they'd be sick of it, but like the chicken and egg situation, like which one makes one easier? So a kick strategy going well puts you in the right area for your lineup not to be under pressure and all of a sudden forwards growing in confidence, or, you know, if you can distribute across the backline better, find a better way forward. So like if you can go forward off your set piece, your forwards are then running with, you know, with energy and they're going forward, not looping back around to try and get you on the front foot again. So that's up to the backs to give you a bit of a target and get over the gain line. So like, again, I think Scott Beaman has options there, whether he goes with Eve Higgins in the centre and gets you across the gain line. So I think she did that really well in the Canada game, or, you know, Enya giving you a bit more distribution plus ball carrying. I think she has both, and she also has a kicking game in there. You know, Aoife Dalton can get you across the gain line. So it depends on who you use to win that kind of midfield challenge. But the key for me is Stacey Flood. I just think she's, like, I've always enjoyed watching her because she's, you know, that triple threat of being able to run, kick, pass. And we've seen that in I think, was she involved in three or four tries or four of them in the Canada game?
Long passes or last minute passes.
Yeah, throwing big passes and distributing well. And that takes the pressure off Dan O'Brien as well. So, like, it's that backline firing as a unit. I think they can get their pack on the front foot as well. So, obviously, it's a team and they need to work well together. But, you know, so many kind of factors that go into it. But you can't look past set piece and you can't look back past, like, you know, kick strategy. And then you're going to get your individuals that will get you a score. We saw Anna McGann's set piece play. It's class. Like, it's so efficient. And she's another one to put in there because she's so athletic. But I think that backline is really excites me. There's so much talent across the backline, even if you lose one or two, which I hope we don't. But you can go different ways about it, and still you can change your strategy and be very confident with what's available to them.
And speaking of Stacey Flood, who Johnny mentioned there, it brings us nicely to, like, you look at the Ireland squad. Only one player in that entire full squad has played at a World Cup before. That's Cliona Maloney-McDonald. How important then is it that you have players like Stacey Flood, Amy Lee Costigan, Bavin Parsons, who they haven't played at World Cups, but they played at an Olympic Games 12 months ago. So they have experience of being in that white hot atmosphere and that big, big tournament pressure and big occasion pressure. How heavily will they be leaned on, not even just on the pitch in terms of like the style of play or anything, but just the intangibles around dealing with the day-to-day of being away at these kind of tournaments? I know this squad were at a WXV last year and stuff, but this is a different ball game.
Yeah, I think obviously the experience that the Olympians in that group bring will be huge. But also 2 years ago, a great cohort of that squad played in Twickenham where it was, you know, 50,000. And that was very overawing for a lot of players, I think, at the time. You know, incredibly exciting, but you get used to it then and you're all of a sudden, that's the exciting part of, you know, World Cup. You're going to have massive crowds game in, game out. But yeah, I think to be able to lean on the girls and be able to see how they felt in that moment. But for them as well, it's going to be seriously exciting because obviously in those huge stadiums, there were 7 of them on the pitch and now there's 15 of them on the pitch. It'll be very exciting for them too. And to be
pitch
doing
will
it
seem
with
a lot smaller.
I know, the pitch will seem a lot smaller. So I think for them, and I think, yes, obviously Cliona Maloney being the only one that was previously at a World Cup, but this squad is so young that there's no kind of over, you know, there's no hangover from anybody else of what's happened at the last World Cup or the failure to qualify for the last World Cup. You don't get that with this group because they're, a lot of them are so fresh and maybe weren't involved that last time out. So those kind of bad demons that might be lingering aren't there for this group, which is fantastic. So they don't have to worry about the monkey on their back or anything. They can go in and just go in and express themselves and hopefully, as you said, not get overawed by the size of the crowds and just relish it and kind of live in the moment and give the best version of themselves. That's what every player wants. You come to the biggest stage, you want to play the best rugby you've played and be on fire for it. So they'll be hoping to do the same.
Yeah, and Johnny, I think in line with that, it's, as Hannah said, it's a very, very young squad and inexperienced in a sense, but players like Aoife Dalton, Dan O'Brien, even in their fairly young careers so far, have seen a lot. They've seen the real downs and they've also got to experience the highs. So they don't have a huge amount of experience in terms of caps, but in terms of the variety of experiences you can get on a rugby pitch, they have seen a lot.
Yeah, they have, and they've been through changes in the backroom team and all the rest of it, and changing the systems and everything. So like they've been through quite a bit. But I think, you know, with that youth, sometimes, you know, you don't really understand what you're going into, and you'd hope that they really take their opportunity now, because I do think there's a massive opportunity for them to go further than they might be expected to, you know. And I think they'll have the expectation within the group, but from what I understand within the coaching group, there's high standards being set. But I hope that really transfers, because the last thing you want is them coming away and going, geez, I'd love to do that again now, and we could have done more. You know, that's the worst part of being a player, because it's like the fear of the unknown, and then you come out of it and go, geez, it wasn't that bad, we could have done more. I just hope they don't do that part. And you know, it's interesting you mentioned the sevens players, because obviously they've got a wealth of experience in tournaments, and it's even mentally the downtime. Like, what do you do when you're away, you're in camp, you're able to enjoy yourself, but it's hard to enjoy yourself because you're thinking about the next thing you're supposed to be doing. But sevens players, you know, are so interesting, because they can go into the dressing room, chewing on jellies, having the crack, and then, oh, you're up again and back out to another game. It's almost like athletics, like, you know, where you're going to heats, and it's like a different tournament altogether. So that mindset shift of being able to snap into gear and bringing people with them, that might be something that they could tap into as well.
From your experience, Hannah, just leaning on what Johnny was saying there, from the players you know in that group, who would be the main ones to take up the old social secretary role to do all that sort of stuff?
Yeah,
I have heard a lot about Niamh O'Dowd as the character of the
scream.
Team off the pitch.
Yeah, I'd say she'd be raging she didn't get the main gig for RTE with Traitors. You've probably seen her version of it within the camp. She's a hoot, but there's loads of them. And I think the beauty, kind of Johnny mentioned it there, of having that downtime, but you'll see, like on any socials, the accessibility to the girls, and you get a real insight as to what the girls are like and their personalities and the crack that they have, and the fact that they enjoy each other's company. I think I saw something on Twitter about them arriving at the airport and having an absolute Irish dancing session to some music that was being played. Like, difference to like the men's team, where you might have a bit more reserve, a bit more kind of all business kind of the whole time around. You get the usual lines kind of towed out for the media and all that kind of stuff. You don't get that with the women, and that's something that's going to, I think, be refreshing to people who maybe haven't got involved in women's rugby before. You got the likes of Niamh O'Dowd, you've got Niamh Jones, you've got Brittany Hogan, you've got so many of them, Ruth Campbell, their TikToks and everything else will be flying. So they're ones to watch for that. But I think from a social point of view, they won't be stuck for things to do, shall we say, in the downtime. And they'll definitely make most of the fun that they have out there and make the most of the experience to really capture it all in, I think.
Yeah, I hope they find stuff to do in Northampton. I was there on a very, very wet Sunday in early January last year, and on a wet Sunday in January, there wasn't much to do aside from go to a rugby game.
Have to get creative, so.
Hopefully they find some stuff to do. Let's move on to the all-important stuff. There's a game this Sunday against Japan in Northampton. Let's have a crack at selecting a team. Scott Beaman's going to name it on Friday morning. The two teams that started the warm-up games were quite varied.
Yeah.
The second one against Canada did look much closer to being a first-choice team. Mm-hmm. For reference point, that is front row of Niamh O'Dowd, Niamh Jones and Linda Dugang. Second row of Ruth Campbell and Fiona Chute. Grace Moore, Ivana Kiripati and Brittany Hogan in the back row. Aveen Riley and Dan O'Brien in the halfbacks. Enya Breen and Aoife Dalton in the centre. Bavin Parsons and Anna McGann on the wings. And Stacey Flood at fullback. How close to that 15 are you expecting this Sunday's team to be?
Close enough. I think anybody who's kind of in the girls as well have been in and around Scott's teams or been in and around that environment. He likes to mix and match it. He likes to keep everybody on their toes, so no one will be feeling very comfortable. There's some that we, obviously looking at it, you'd feel would pick themselves. I think that front row would probably stay very similar. Mm-hmm. I think in an ideal world, I think we might have mentioned this as well in the last couple of weeks. On an ideal world, you'd like to have Cliona Maloney and Niamh Jones on the pitch together, with Niamh playing at six, and let her do that danger work at the breakdown that she does. But unfortunately, we don't have the ability to have kind of that depth of hookers that we need. So they're prized possessions, the two of them, unfortunately. Mm. So you have, unfortunately, you have to kind of toss up between the two. I suppose you'd probably go for Niamh O'Dowd. You'd probably go for Niamh Jones and Linda. I'd say Sam obviously being nailed on to be in there in that second row as well.
And partnering her.
And I would say partnering with Ruth. I would say Ruth Campbell maybe get the nod. But again, he might decide horses for courses. It's different, you know, of what's there. I think you might keep someone like Fiona Chute in reserve in terms of line-out caller there if something, needed.
Sam, you reckon, will be locked in?
I think Sam has to be locked in. I think of what she brings you in terms of setting the tone. She sets the tone offensively and defensively. You have to have her in there in terms of what she does by her actions and how she leads vocally as well. I think you have to have her in there.
I might put a pin on it before we get to the back row. I'll bring Johnny in for... Johnny there, front row, Niamh O'Dowd, Niamh Jones and Linda Dugang. Like that is the pretty much locked in trio we've seen over the last few years. I don't think we're expecting anything different there. In terms of second row, what way would you be leaning before we move on to the back row?
Oh, I just agree. I think Sam has to go in. I think like, especially, you know, coming in a bit later there to off the bench in the Canada game, it just needs a bit of time within the group and leadership positions. It's funny, the leadership positions, they don't get a break. You know, they're kind of not often anyways, you know what I mean? So you have to have them on the pitch for the start, and then they'll have a good feeling of what's happening in the group. There's just no way you can leave them out, and lo and behold, the team will be named. Like, but and I'll be wrong, but I don't think you can leave out your leadership group, because that's there's a lot more intangibles around the pitch as well. So she has to go in.
And then the back row is where there are selections to be made, real, real big calls. So Grace Moore, Ivana Kiripati, and Brittany Hogan started both games. I suppose it changes if Adele McMahon is fit. And does she come straight into a starting team? Does she stay on the bench? If Adele McMahon is fit, what way would you be leaning for a starting team this
season? If she's fit, it's interesting because we go back to the Sam point. I think it seems like it wouldn't make any link, but there probably is, because in terms of your co-captains, Sam obviously has played two 40-minute stints for Ireland, or like 35 and a 40.
Yeah.
And I think with Sam's history over the last few years of being probably maybe rushed back at times from injuries or coming back, and it's unfortunate, it's maybe nothing to do with, you know, minutes on pitch, but she's been unlucky. She needs to be minded. So you're talking maybe 50 minutes for Sam, and maybe Eakin Tricky or Adele McMahon back in. So maybe in that case, then you have someone like... I don't know if they'll start Ivana Kiripati, but Grace Moore and Brittany, you'd be saying probably nailed on. You'd love to have Adele McMahon, a totally fit Adele McMahon starting, but I think maybe you keep her in reserve on the bench given the fact that she hasn't had minutes. You don't throw her in there, and possibly having to sub her and Sam on at the same time. So that might be the only swinger there who fills that seven jersey. Is it someone like Claire Bowles who comes in with a bit more experience in kind of the senior level than Ivana Kiripati? Who knows? You know, he might go for something different there. God only knows with him. He could choose anything.
Johnny?
I think Hannah's right with the leadership. Like, you see a lot more of it these days. You need someone finishing that game as well. If there's if it's tight at the end, or if decision making at the end, you do need a leader on there. So with co-captains, and I would say that if Adele McMahon is fit, she'll go on the bench. Now that's kind of contradictory to what I just said, but it's again the leadership role of finishing the game because of their fitness. I think you're spot on. That's how I would see it going. But again, a good fast start is half the battle too, so it depends on how he wants to set that up.
And how impressed have you been with Ivana Kiripati over these first couple of games?
Yeah, it's been tough, I think, because obviously her...
Big shoes to fill,
but also I suppose coming in and trying to get up to that speed of international rugby, kind of her experience. Obviously she's played a bit with Connacht at interprovincial level, has played a bit with the Clovers at kind of Celtic Challenge level, but it's not the same. Like, it's obviously big difference. So she definitely, in terms of kind of the... you're getting used to that feeling of the engine of what it's like, and that kind of constantly keep going for the 80 minutes. She obviously got the full match, I think, for versus Scotland, and then got good minutes again, probably for 40 minutes against Canada, which will stand to her playing those type of calibers of to the two teams for various different reasons. But yeah, whether he decides to go for her again, I don't know. You know, for me personally, I'd be putting someone just more experience in for that opening game, as you said, to do with the atmosphere, to do with the kind of the feel of the big occasion, and kind of not being overawed by it. And not to say that she would be, but I suppose just someone who's maybe been there for a bit longer, maybe to put them in that position.
Out in the back line then, Dan O'Brien, we're assuming, is going to be locked in at out half. Scrum half is the fun one. This feels very much like trying to figure out who Razzie Erasmus is going to pick at out half for the Springboks. It just seems to change every single week. Doesn't necessarily even seem to have like a rhyme or reason to it. Just as you think one player has nailed down the spot, someone else is coming in. That player isn't even on the bench. They're out of a 23.
Yeah.
You're looking at Avian Riley, Emily Lane, or Molly Scuffle McCabe. They've mm-hmm. all had game time over the three matches. Who on earth, who are the two that are going to be in the match day 23, let alone who's going to start?
Yeah, it's literally anybody's guess, and Johnny probably be the same and thinking, like, it's not even a case of, like, sometimes you see with Razzie, it's who pairs best with the 9 and the 10. But we don't have that because obviously Dana seems to be more, Dana is his go-to and she's the main one. And it's like, who has that link up? They're all slightly different, you know, with Molly Scuff and McCabe, you get quite that running game and that kind of sniping, and she's always looking for something. You also get a bit of kicking variety. With Avian, though, you get the same. You get that speed of ball, you get that accuracy of the pass. And then the same with Emily. Emily, obviously, coming from that sevens background, you get that speed of play, and he seems to have favoured her in the two games of coming off the bench to keep the tempo up and keep the tempo high. But God only knows what he could do, because I suppose it started off with his tenure. You know, Avian Riley was getting that starting jersey. Then it flipped to Emily Lane, and now we flipped again. We've seen Molly Scuffle McCabe over the last while get those starting bibs. So genuinely, as you said, it's a toss-up as to who he goes for on the day and for what reasons. It could be anything, but yeah, definitely keeping those three on their toes for sure.
Care to have a stab, Johnny? Again, similar to with the who's going to win the World Cup, we'll cut this clip out as well, depending on which one you get right.
I think Emily Lane, being a corker, is probably going to have to go into the spot. Like, is that how we answer it? That's how we get out of it anyway. But again, like, it's great to have that. Great to have that kind of level of competition, because if one of the nines goes down, it's a really important position. I'm not saying you're going to wish for it, but like the next person in does the job, and I think that's a real strength of theirs at the moment. I suppose even Riley is a really good player from what I can see. So maybe that's the way I'd lean at the moment, but again, it's anyone's guess.
You're not weakening any of those three, I think, by picking any of them, basically.
Yeah, I was kind of going to say, does it fill you with confidence that there are three very, very viable options, or would it worry you there's no standout option? Like, at the very least, there's no standout option in the eye of the head coach.
Yeah, I suppose it's a double thing. If you're as a player, you're nearly wanting to, you get the confidence, and Johnny probably know, you know, you get, if you're getting selected, you're almost getting the confidence in how you're playing and how you're doing, that the main man is backing you for the starting jersey. So I don't know, it's that mental game with yourself that you're playing, that you know you're not doing too much wrong, or you know you're kind of close to it. So I guess it keeps them all kind of chomping at the bit. So it's more the mental game than anything, to try to keep yourself ready and be firing on all cylinders for when your time, if your time to shine comes.
Center.
Players want momentum, like a bit of momentum in their game, and the halfbacks need a bit of connection too. So it's probably going to have to nail that down in the competition now, you know, and give them a chance to kind of find that rhythm for the rest of the team's sake as well. You know, connection on exits, connection on when they're running and kicking, like that's very important for a team chemistry too.
Yeah.
Centers, you're talking two out of Enya Breeny, Eva Dalton and Eve Higgins, mm-hmm. realistically barring any injuries, Nancy McGillivray would come in. But are we looking probably at Aoife Dalton and Eve Higgins in the centre, with Enya Breen being that extra option on the bench, the number 23 jersey with the versatility across the back line? Is she ultimately that player that kind of misses out because of her own versatility?
I know, as a club mate of mine, I'd be back, and obviously I like the combination. Johnny talked about it already, that kicking option. I like having an Enya and an Aoife Dalton in there. So Breen and Dalton are my kind of 12 and 13s. But obviously you're not losing any punch when you put Eve in there. She's very much a running 12 or a running 13 that she brings you as well, in those breaks and kind of the links in with the sevens girls on the wings and a full back. That familiarity with them, you can see it in games as well. When the open play comes, she really shines. So yeah, you're not weakening, and I suppose they're your three front runners for it. But like you said, I think there might come a time where, you know, if Nicole Fowley is obviously our backup 10, isn't fully fit to be on the bench, or the versatility, unfortunately, that if you're going with a 6-2 split, that, you know, you want someone who can cover 10, and Enya can do that, fortunately. But unfortunately for her, she might become that jack of all trades where she's filling the bench spot because of the option it gives them for both cover. So yeah, I think it's a toss up between those three, really.
Johnny?
Yeah, I think it's funny how you look at the 10 cover, because with it being such a specialist position, and depending on how robust your players have been, sometimes you can have your 10 position coming from 12 and just flicking in one, and you can carry someone differently. But again, you know, it does depend on the confidence over how people last the game and what they're seeing in training, etc. The only thing that I would add to that is that, you know, in the Canada game, the midfield connections just felt awkward, and defensively they definitely weren't on the same page. If they feel that's a simple fix, then you could continue. If he feels that, you know, it's just giving him a small bit of doubt in the back of his mind, you could change it, you know. So I just thought, and maybe the game changed around at that stage anyway in the second half, but I think Eve Higgins really gives you life in the middle of the pitch. she really gets across the gain line, and that's half the battle when you think about this game being so linear. Like, it is half the battle. So I think if there's too much doubt created with those kind of disconnects in the midfield, then change will happen. But again, you're going to a different connection then, and you haven't really tested that yet. Maybe this is the game that you can do that for the longer term sake of the tournament. But it's a really hard one to call. I like the kicking game that Enya brings, but Eve certainly brings something in the middle field that I would like, though.
But it sounds like Aoife is the one that's kind of definitely in
you're
there.
building your defense. And I know Johnny said at that Canada game that was definitely kind of unusual in the sense that the severe pressure that Canada put Ireland under in those defensive channels kind of in the middle. But you kind of look back and you reverse a few phases, you know, Canada were punching us up the gut and Ireland were unable to make those dominant hits, and all of a sudden the fold was non-existent. Everybody got nervy and narrow around the ruck. So there's that too, but you got to take onus. I know there was a few missed tackles that are non-negotiables as well. So yeah, it's hard to see. But yeah, I would be putting Aoife Dalton in there locked in, because you build your defence. I know I've said it in Six Nations. You build your defence around her. I think what you get with her and you haven't played with the both of them, you get quite a vocal centre partnership. Aoife would be a little bit on the quieter side, but of course packs a massive punch herself as well. But on pitch, you get a lot of volume from Enya and from Aoife to lead you to get that confidence, especially when it's something that Ireland have been a bit shaky on in the last two games.
And finally then, back three. Stacey Flood probably full back is what we'd be expecting. Then on the wings, it's any two or three: Beavan Parsons, Emily Costigan, and Anna McGann.
Yeah, I think you're probably locked in. Obviously, we see Maeve Dealey, you know, get selected to go on in, as part of the squad as well, which is great for her. And she obviously featured in that Scotland game, but probably due to Stacey's ability for those, as Johnny said, those big passes that can unlock defences with the 30-metre pass, you're putting her in there. I think possibly for the excitement factor, you know, not that Anna McGann has done anything wrong and she's been strong when she's played. I think the pace that you get to burn with Amy Lee Costigan and Beavan Parsons is something that I'd like to see, you know, the two of them kind of flying on all cylinders for the first game, to see what that looks like.
Johnny, quickly, would you be leaning Parsons, Costigan on the wings?
Yeah, probably. You're talking about experience here as well, like, aren't you? And, you know, big games, finishing power, you probably would be, like, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think that's potentially the way it's going. Very quickly before we finish up, guys, quick verdict. Ireland, Japan this Sunday. Ireland win, Ireland bonus point win, Japan win.
I'm going to say Ireland bonus point win anyway. We'll go confidence out the block.
I was going to go Ireland win, keep it simple. I don't care how they do it, but start with a win. That's the basic thing for me.
All right, so we're predicting a win out of the blocks from Hannah O'Connor and Johnny Holland. Just to remind everyone, there's a heap of rugby coming up across the weekend, across RT Sport. On Friday night, England against USA in the tournament opener, Pool A, at the Stadium of Light in Sunderland, RT2 and RT Player. On Saturday, two games on RT2 and RT Player. Scotland against Wales in Manchester at 2:45. That's Pool B. Then the Pool D meeting of France and Italy in Exeter at 8:15 p.m. Also that day in Pool B, Canada against Fiji is at 5:30 on RT Player. Then on Sunday, from our point of view, the big one, Ireland against Japan, 12 noon kickoff at Franklin's Gardens in Northampton. Coverage on RT2 and RT Player from 11:30 a.m. And there's also commentary, live commentary on RT2 FM as well that afternoon of the Ireland game. And also on Sunday then, Pool D, South Africa against Brazil at 2:45 p.m. and New Zealand against Spain at 5:30 in Ireland's Pool C. Both of those games are live on RT Player. Hannah and Johnny, it's been brilliant having you on. Hannah, it's been brilliant having you in our lovely, lovely, colourful new studio for
Thanks
the very
so
first
much.
Time. We're looking forward to getting used to this a little bit more, get it decorated a little bit more. And who knows, Johnny, we might get you up the road as well at some point.
Possibly.
All right. Cheers, folks.
Thanks, guys.